My talk is very simple, and the children can stay, and then I'll give you the signal, and those who are over 12 years of age can go out into the barn where Inga will. Now, Eric read in very clearly, and it's so important to give the meaning and clarity of reading, the story of Elijah, which everybody knows, and I'll be speaking on Elijah. And there are a couple of truths I want to bring out. Simple ones first for the children, and then deeper ones for the adults. The first thing I want to tell you, children, is that the day when Elijah was on earth was something like now. The nation of Israel was going astray, had gone astray. There was 450 prophets of Baal, bear in mind, and he was the only prophet who was speaking out. And though there were 100 prophets being hid in a cave, the fact was he was preaching boldly to the people, who were 1 minute thinking, this is right. And then when they'd hear the prophets of Baal, they would say, no, this is right. There's more sense in this. And then when they would hear Elijah, they would think, yeah, that's right. It's like when you listen to the politicians. At one stage you think, that's right, that sounds so logical, isn't that so? It sounds so right. Then you listen to the other party, and he's talking, and you say, yeah, that's right too. And then the time comes when you have to actually vote. You've got to go and vote for which politician you want to choose, or which member of parliament. And there, what, before each election, there are these floating voters. They don't know. When they do a survey and say, who are you going to vote for? They say, I don't know, I'll decide that on the day. And very, very often, even on the day, people don't know. And they walk down into the polling booths, and there are various candidates standing there, or their staff, and telling them to vote, because they know that some people make up their minds right at the door of the polling booth. Isn't that so? And people are like that. Christians are like that. The people of the world are like that. 1 minute they are with the crowd. They think, that's right, I'll just go along with everyone else. And then another time they think, no, God doesn't want me to do that. God wants me to go this way. And at that critical time, when Elijah said, why halt ye on one opinion or the next? It was like 1 minute they're standing on this leg, saying, yeah, that's right, that's for me. And the next minute they're doing that. Now you children all have to make that decision. Who are you going to serve? Baal, by the way, as Jesse will bear me out, is an Indian word for the god bull, isn't that? Which is the kingpin of agriculture. Without the bull, you couldn't plow your fields, you couldn't pull your bullock cart, you couldn't thresh your corn, you would have no shoes, and without the cow, you'd have no milk. So that was the main animal in the agricultural world. And they believed that every plot of land, and it still happens in India, every plot of land has a special Baal, a special spirit. And if you want that plot of land to be very, very productive, you have to worship that spirit on that plot. And they had trees, great big trees, which they had a little image down there, and they used to feed the image. Isn't that so, Jesse? under the peepal tree, or under the banyan tree. These are sacred trees. And all these sacred trees are all over these countries, and they were in Israel. In some countries they have what they call totem poles. Have you heard of a totem pole? It's a sacred pole. And they worship the god. And he's all his faces and his drawings and all his wives or his children are ugly gods. And they worship the gods who are represented by this sacred pole, this totem pole. And the people of Israel were like that. And the people of the world are like that. And the Indians are like that. And the Africans are like that. And the British are like that. And the Scots are like that. And the Americans and Canadians too. They worship what the majority is doing. And they worship they know not what. Another thing about Baal worship, and your children will go out after this, is that during the worship of Baal, they had certain sexual rites. They all got worked up in a frenzy. The music playing, the drums playing, and slowly, slowly they got in a frenzy. They used to drink, and their clothes were stripped off, and they used to dance naked, and they would have a sexual ball, a spree. Baal worship was fertility rites were on these land, around these trees, around these sacred poles, because they believed that fertility of the womb, of the field, and every grain that you sowed depended on the god who was in that place, that Baal. And Balaam, of course, is plural for the Baals. They never worshipped the creator of that land. They worshipped this evil spirit on that plot, believing falsely, of course, that if you placated him, an angel beings, evil angels, would answer certain questions, and these people would fall down and worship. And the big test came when Elijah came on the scene. Elijah, his name means, my God is Yahweh. That's why they said, Elijah, he, Yahweh, is God. Yah is God. That's what it means. He's the Lord. And they were tossing up, who is the God? And the question at that time was, the God who brings down the fire, he is the God. Isn't that so? And they all waited, and these fellows danced about all day. They had done it before, they had brought fire down before. Don't think this was the first time. And they thought he wanted a more sacrifice. They had sacrificed children in Baal worship. They were cutting themselves and stabbing themselves. And in the end, the audience was not, the Israelites were not even listening. They just said, they got tired. Nobody could speak. These guys had gone on for hours and they were voiceless. And nobody was paying any attention anyway. And Elijah was taunting them, shout a bit louder. Had a great sense of humor, mind you, but under those conditions, I don't think I would have been that bold. But he was saying, shout a bit longer, maybe he's gone on a long journey, maybe he's asleep, wake him up. And you know the story well. Well, the fire fell when Elijah prayed. Isn't that so? The fire fell. There's a prophecy in the Bible which says when the Antichrist comes on the scene, the false prophet will bring fire from heaven down in the sight of men. Because men will be facing the same test. And the test will be, you serve Elijah. Elijah's God. You serve Yahweh. All right? Let him bring fire down. We'll apply the Elijah test. And people say, yeah, go ahead. Go on. He done it in the Bible, didn't he? God brought down the fire when Elijah was there. Well, let him bring it down now in the 20th century or 21st century. Let's see. And when he brings down the fire, the person who brings down the fire, he is God. Isn't that so? But in the Revelation it says that the false prophet will bring down fire this time. And the world will be taken in. Because those who do not study the book of Revelation do not know that in this case God will allow Baal to bring down the fire. They don't know that. They don't even read the book of Revelation. But you know, and I'm telling you now, the fire will be brought down by the false prophet, not the true one. All right, you children, away you go. All right, now that the children are out, let us get back to the main talk. In the very last chapter of the Old Testament, if you turn to it, Malachi, there is a strange prophecy. Malachi, and I'll read just a few verses of it. Verse 4 and 5 and 6. Remember ye the law of Moses my servant, which I commanded unto him in Horeb for all Israel, with the statutes and judgments. Now here it is, verse 5. Behold, I will send you Elijah the prophet before the coming of the great and dreadful day of the Lord. I will send you Elijah the prophet. Now, on the first reading, you'll think, well, that's pretty straightforward. Elijah, supposedly taken to heaven, he's going to come back. And he, that's Elijah, shall turn the heart of the fathers to the children, and the heart of the children to their fathers, lest I come and smite the earth with a curse. It's already been cursed. But so if he's going to give it another curse, could you imagine the destruction? Now I want to talk about this prophecy for a little while. I will send you Elijah the prophet before the great and dreadful day of the Lord. Now all the Israelites and all the rabbis and all the learned people of Israel, when they heard that prophecy and read it and studied it, they knew that before the Messiah would come, and the great and dreadful day where the Lord would follow, because he would punish the heathen and release Israel, they knew that Elijah would come, because that's the very last prophecy in the Old Testament. So when John the Baptist came on the scene, a lot of people thought, he could be Elijah. Elijah stayed in the wilderness, off there, this leather mantle and girdle, hairy bearded guy, you know. And they thought, this is Elijah. If ever a prophet looked like Elijah, it was John the Baptist. Isn't that so? So they came to John the Baptist and they asked him the question. You'll have to help me out. I think it's in John chapter 1 and 2.
No, not John. Matthew.
Good. I've lost all my notes in it. But anyway, Matthew 1 and 2. And they say to John, are you Elijah? Are you Elijah? All right. Let's find that. All you students of Bible, the Bible. Call it out. I'll go back and look at John.
No, not John. Yes, sir.
I like it.
Yes, John. Just one bear strength.
Yeah. She's a Bible student, but she is younger than me. Okay. Verse 19. This is the record of John when the Jews sent priests and Levites from Jerusalem to ask him, "Who art thou?" And he confessed and denied not, but confessed, "I am not the Christ." And they asked him, "What then? Art thou Elias," which is Greek for Elijah? And he said, "I am not." "Art thou that prophet?" Great prophet was expected to. And he said, he answered, "No." Then say they unto him, "Who art thou, that we may give an answer to them that sent us? What sayest thou of thyself?" He said, "I am a voice of one crying in the wilderness, make straight the way of the Lord, as said the prophet Isaiah." And they which were sent were of the Pharisees. And they asked him and said unto him, "Why baptizest thou then, if thou be not the Christ, nor Elias or Elijah, neither that prophet?" And then John goes on to say, "I baptize with water, but he's going to baptize with the Holy Spirit." So when they asked him categorically, "Are you Elijah?" he said, "No." "Are you the Messiah?" "No." And here's where you can all help me, because I think it is Matthew, the next part. So when the disciples went to Jesus and asked him, "Why do the scribes and Pharisees say that before the Christ comes, Elijah must come?" So if you're the Christ, which we believe full-heartedly, where's Elijah? And Jesus said, "Elijah has already come." And they didn't recognize him. And they said, "But he was speaking of John the Baptist." Do you understand?
Yeah.
So when they asked Elijah, when he asked John, "Are you Elijah?" he said, "No." When they asked Jesus, "Where is Elijah?" he said, "John's Elijah." And John didn't know he was Elijah. Nobody knew what the prophecy meant. They thought it was either the man coming down, or a reincarnation of the man, or, you know, definitely not thinking about something else. And when John was asked, "What are you then? Tell us what you are." He said, "I'm just a voice. I'm just a message. That's all I am. I'm a message. I'm a voice crying in the wilderness, make straight the path." And I want to bring to your attention the Elijah message, because John was preaching the Elijah message without even knowing the fact that he was the Elijah message. He didn't know it. Isn't that amazing? The disciples didn't know it. The priests and the prophets and all the other rabbis didn't know it. And the only one who knew that he was Elijah was Jesus. Because he knew that the prophecy was not talking about a literal man. It was talking about a message which literal men would present, the Elijah message. Now in 1 Kings 18, when Elijah was met, just go through a few important points here. He caused the rain, by the way. He prayed and the rain stopped. I don't know how often he prayed for the rain to stop, but anyway, he commanded and the rain stopped. Then he prayed again, but we know he prayed 7 times. I'll come to that later. The fact was, all the grass dried up, You know what it is when there's no rain? You know, Max was telling me that, you know, it's such a dry year in Canada this year that if it doesn't rain really heavy this winter, they're in trouble for next year's crops. We, on the other hand, have had such a wet year. The rain that goes up from the oceans, the same amount the sun evaporates, the same amount of water every day. And if it's spread like a watering can over various nations, that's fine, everyone does well. But if you take the hose off, or the rows off, and pour all the watering can on one nation, or one plant, and everybody else has nothing, you'll flood this place out and they'll have drought. And that's what's happening. The same amount of water is going up, and it's falling in abundance on some nations, and causing terrible floods, and other nations are having none. But anyway, back to Elijah. He stopped the rain. And Ahab, who had married Jezebel, her name is also symbolic of evil women, women who just live it up. She was a priestess of Baal. That's why her name was Jezebel. And Ahab had built a temple in Samaria, which went into rebellion against the southern kingdom. And the temple of God was in Jerusalem, but he built a temple in Samaria called the Temple of Baal. And all the prophets of Baal dressed in certain garments, and you could spot them straight away when they walked down the street or when they went into the temple. You could tell these are the prophets of Baal. And in this temple, they had worship, they worshiped Baal, and they encouraged the locality and all the Israelites into free sex, free love, do what you please, enjoy yourself, drink what you want, drink as much as you want, have as many women as you can. And they had special women in the temple, male and women, and male and female, prostitutes. Religious prostitutes in the temple of Baal. And if you study Ashtoreth and the worship of Baal, I had some quotations. It was really sex worship. They made a god of free sex. And Jezebel was encouraging this. And Ahab, king of Israel, was too weak to stop it. Sometimes he thought, Elijah's right. Other times he thought, ah. This is fun, this is great, this is marvelous. Most Israelites are not the same. Anyway, Elijah wants to bring attention to everyone. And in the millennium, the same thing will happen. If a nation doesn't come up to keep the feast, there will be no rain on it. Why? Because God wants to show all the nations of the world that it's not a little spirit in this field or some other field or wherever brings the rain in proportion. It's the Creator that gives the rain in a right amount. It's not these spirit beings, these evil angels they love to be worshipped. They want to be worshipped. I remember once in India, we were going hunting. And we walked and walked and we got nothing. And then one of these shikaris, that's these little hunters, he said, you know, you'll never get anything here today, he says, because they haven't had a little sacrifice. I don't know whether you know this story yet. And my father, of course, said, well, I don't believe in all that. And he said, well, you just sit there, we'll do a little sacrifice here, and we'll show you. And they got a cockbird, cut its throat, and they offered a little sacrifice to this local god who controlled that part of the jungle. 5 minutes later, they shot an animal. They said, there you are. So these evil spirits that take control of little plots of ground or little territories or little cities or little congregations are well able to do miracles. Well able, I know. absolutely amazing what they can do. There was a man who sold himself to the devil, and the devil said, I'll give you great power, but your soul is mine when you die. I'm going to take over you. And he said, oh, that's fine. Let me have power. He could stop a train, an express train going through the station, not scheduled to stop. He could say, stop. It would stop on the platform with its wheels spinning and sparks flying. And everybody knew this fellow. They said, let it go. It's an express. It's a through train. Go on, release it. Don't come all your nonsense. And he would say, go. And the train would go. And he was walking down the street on the platform once with my father, and he said, you want to see power? I'll show you power. He took out a box of matches. He took out a bundle of matches, and he struck it. And there was water on the pavement, and he threw it down. And every match burnt all the way to the end, in the water. So the devils have power, I can assure you. Great power. And Israel was absolutely won over by this power. And these prophets knew they could do miracles. They didn't take on a challenge which they thought, well, maybe it'll work. They knew they could do it. That's why they accepted the challenge. It'd be silly to take on a challenge. Would you accept the challenge, Lord? Come along, we'll go down there, put it, you know, there's the soup. Go on, let's see you cook it. Bring it on the fire. Hey, would you take on? You wouldn't even dare accept a challenge, Lord, would you? Because we can't do it. But they knew they could do it. But Elijah's God stopped them. He wouldn't let them do it. Because he wanted to prove that he had more power than Baal did. He has more power than Satan does. His prophets have more power than the false prophet has. But at the end, in the book of Revelation, when the same challenge is thrown, they say, right, bring down the fire in the sight of men. Here it is. They'll turn to 1 Kings chapter 18. The God that answers by fire, he is the God. Do you accept that? It's in the Bible. The population will all say, yeah, that's right. That's a pretty good test. There's no doubt about that. That's incredible. Who can ever do a thing like that? The God, choose one bullock for yourself, dress it first. They took the bullock and so on. They leaped upon the altar. And the test was, the God that answers by fire, he's God. The other one is secondary, unimportant. He's below this person. And in the Revelation it says, the false prophet will bring down the fire. So stand by. When they say to you, right, come along to the test. Or even sit in your home and hide your face under your blanket. You'll watch. We'll answer with fire. You'll be able to say, listen, we know you're going to bring down fire, right? We were told 2,000 years ago that you would bring down fire. Long before you even thought about the idea, we knew. Because that's what they're going to do, bring down the fire. You know what happened to the prophets of Baal? Elijah slaughtered 450. Can you imagine that? He told the people, round up this bunch, take them down to the brook and kill them all. Can you imagine the blood that flowed? Hey, 450, I mean, yeah, we're only about 30 people here. Must have been a terrifying scene. Elijah was a very fit man, mind you. And then he told Ahab, now, right, get ready, we're going to have rain. Before he had prayed. He hadn't prayed yet. And then he went up Carmel with his servant, and he kneeled on the ground, his head between his knees, and he prayed. And the servant, nothing. Nothing. Elijah prayed again. Once. Nothing. I wonder how long we would have prayed for rain. Give it a try someday. And then when the servant says, I can see a cloud about the size of a man's hand. That's it, Elijah says. Go and run and tell Ahab. The rain is coming fast. Get ready. We haven't got much time to spare. I can only see a tiny cloud after the seventh prayer. And then he girded up his loins and he ran 20 miles in front of Ahab's chariot. Talk about marathon runners. This man was fit. What does all this mean to us? How do we fit into this picture? Before the great and terrible dreadful day of the Lord comes, I'll send Elijah the prophet. The great and dreadful day of the Lord hasn't come yet. There was a big gap between the Messiah coming, dying for our sins, going to heaven, and the great and dreadful day of the Lord, which is still future. The prophecy said, I will send you Elijah the prophet before the great and dreadful day of the Lord comes. And that hasn't come yet. Now, what are we to do? Are we to look for Elijah? No. You're not all one day going to see a guy walking around, leather, you know, girdle, big long beard. You know, you're not going to see a fellow scrounging around looking for caterpillars or, what's it, grasshoppers and eating honey. Don't look for that. You're going to look and listen out for a message in this wilderness of sin. And it's not going to be preached by one man either. It's going to be preached around the world. Isn't that so? The Elijah message. Because when Elijah's message is preached, millions will say, millions of Christians are waiting for Elijah, by the way. They're waiting for the literal man to come down from heaven. And they think when he comes, we'll listen. The literal man is not going to come down from heaven any more than he came in the first black time. But what we need to do is understand what to look for. We've got to look out for the Elijah message. And the Elijah message is, very briefly, worship God. Keep his commandments. Turn away from Baal worship. When Ahab said to Elijah, are you the troublemaker? You're the one who's causing all this problem. You. We don't have rain because of you. Partly right. It was because of him, and that's all. Who'd stop the rain? Elijah had stopped the rain. But the real root cause was sin. And Elijah said, it's not me. I'm not the troublemaker. You're the troublemaker and your wife Jezebel. You've led the whole nation into sin, breaking the commandments of God. And if the Elijah message calls people back to the commandments of God, away from the sexual freedom which is swamping the world. Isn't that so? Baal worship is swamping society. Well, of course, it comes in a very civilized garment. You know, those old guys who were Baal worshippers didn't walk about, you know, they didn't drive to the temple in nice cars and wear flash clothes and all. But what they did in the temple of Baal was what's happening right now. And some of the churches, isn't that so? In some of the churches. And some of the churches are advocating free sex. And as Tommy preached the other day on homosexuality, they have churches full of homosexuals. The ministers are homosexuals. They get married. They adopt children and so on. And this is Baal worship. This is Baal worship with a collar and tie. Isn't it so? This is Baal worship in the jet age. the degrading sexual lives and, shall I say, standards of modern society is no different from ancient Israel. And the Elijah message is calling people away from that. When John the Baptist came and he preached and baptized people, there was the King Herod didn't like him. He liked to hear him sometimes, but some of the things he said he didn't like. And as for his wife, he had taken his brother Philip's wife, and John said, it's not lawful for you to take her. And Herod, he was at a loss. He wanted to believe John. He liked John. He liked to listen to John. But at the same time, he was saying some pretty rough things about him and his life. And as for his wife, Herodias, that's right. She hated John the Baptist. Why? Because John the Baptist was telling her she's an adulteress. In no uncertain terms. Just as Elijah told Jezebel that she's teaching sexual freedom in the temple, and that she was really leading Israel astray, and that we've got to get back to obedience. And when John the Baptist pointed out sins, she said, I'll get this guy somehow. And you know the story? At a big party, the king had royal guests. They'd come from various countries. All the dignitaries of Israel and probably Moab and Ammon and Syria and all were there. And then he said, put on a real show. You wait, you boys, I want to show you something. And he called in Salome, and she danced. She danced, and everybody's eyes were popping out of their heads when they saw her. Even Herod's. He said, go on, ask me a favor. Anything you want, up to half my kingdom. And she said, oh, that was an absolute, you know, I'll give you everything, practically of the kingdom, but, you know, I've just got to be a little ahead of you. And she went back and asked Herodias, what should I ask? He said, in front of all those people, I'll give you anything up to half the kingdom. And she said, give me the head of John the Baptist on a tray. And she came in front of them all, beautiful girl, practically, you know, seductively dressed. You know, you've seen the film probably, Naomi and Salome and the Seven Dance of the Seven Veils. And she said, I want the head of John the Baptist on a platter, on a charger, on a tray, on a dish. And Herod thought, what a stupid fool I've been. And everybody looked at him as to say, what are you going to do now, boy? Do you keep your word? You've made a promise. And because they were all looking at him, he said, well, go on, cut his head off. They went down, grabbed John, put blood splurting out of his neck, put it on a dish, came and gave it to her. And she took it and said, yeah, here you are, mother. That's the fellow's tongue kept on worrying us. That's him, beheaded. That's why it says those who stand up against the beast and expose the world, the Christian church too, about the sins, some of them will be beheaded. It says that in Revelation chapter 20, they will be beheaded just as John was beheaded, because John was preaching the Elijah message. He was beheaded. And we stand up and say that the morals of society have gone downhill, and that fornication is okay. They advise it. Oh, yes, yes. Before we get married, just have a couple of boyfriends or girlfriends. Just get to know things, you know. Don't settle down first before you've had three or four girls or five or six men. You know, then you'll be happy. And fornication is encouraged. You only have to read the newspaper, see the television. Every single program practically is riddled with it. It's Baal worship. It's sex worship. The society is becoming sexually crazed, bent, twisted. And the Elijah message is speaking out against it. And some will lose their heads, and I'm not talking about just, you know, in a figurative way, in a literal way. It's a get these guys out of the way, chop their heads off. Now the prophecy goes on to say something very nice, which I will more or less close with. Malachi. There are very many lessons to be learned in the Elijah story. The widow, he went to Zarephath, and God said, you go there, and I've commanded the widow to feed you. There's no food. And when he comes to this town, he sees this widow gathering a few sticks, and she's right down to her last little amount of flour and probably a little olive oil. And she thought, well, I'll make a couple of chapatis. My son and me will eat it, and then we'll die. Because there's nothing in the land, and there's nothing in the house. On the scene, she sees this guy coming along, Elijah. And he says to her, what are you doing? I'm gathering two sticks to make my last meal and die. Make some for me first. What would you have thought of Elijah? Suppose a reporter was standing by and says, prophet of God had come, this woman is on her last legs, she's on her last meal, she's as skinny as they go, and she's going to just eat one more meal and die. And this prophet of the Lord comes and says, just give me something first, and afterwards you can have a bite. What would the press have said? What would you have thought? What does it mean? What's the symbolic lesson in that? A personal view is, we are the widow. God asked us, put Elijah's message first. Oh, what a test the widow went through, isn't it? Don't you think so? She could have said, don't be stupid. That's all I've got. You call yourself a man of God? There's the gate of the city, or there's the door. Please go. But enough of you guys. But she put Elijah, because she recognized this is. And she lived for some time on that. What about the lesson of the seven prayers? I've often thought about this. Elisha, who commanded the Assyrian to wash in the Jordan seven times. Where did he learn it from? He learned it from Elijah. I remember a lady got sick the other three years ago, and we prayed for her. And whenever I used to go to her house, she would say, will you say a prayer? And I said, yes, that's right, anoint me. I'd always go prepared with a little oil, and I would anoint her. Lived at Stewart, and her husband was with me. We anointed her once, twice, three times, four times, on four occasions, different days, five times, and the next week she died. And her husband had said to me at the time, he said, that's five times. I said, yeah. He said, how long will you go on? I said, I'll go on seven times. I often think to myself, maybe if we had anointed her seven times, she would have been. I don't know. He prayed seven times. Our fellow was baptized when he came out of the water of the Jordan. I don't suppose he looked any different, do you? In fact, I think he looked worse, a little bit more mud on his sores and all. His clothes were a little bit dirtier. And then he went down again. Everybody's looking at him. Up he comes again. And it's only on the seventh time he was healed. And that's a symbol of, or that's a token of total dedication. on the part of the widow and on the part of Elijah. And he knew the rain was going to come. He told Ahab to go before he prayed. And that's a great lesson. But the Elijah message gives me another thought here in the closing part. And he, verse 6, and he, Elijah, shall turn the heart of the fathers to the children, and the heart of the children to their fathers. What does that mean? We know the Elijah message calls people back to obedience. We know that. We know the literal man is not going to come down any more now than he did in the days of John the Baptist. We now know when Jesus said Elijah has come, he was pointing to John. And when they asked him, are you Elijah? No, I'm not Elijah. We know that he's talking about a message in the wilderness, in a wilderness of sin. But what does that mean? The Elijah message is going to turn the heart of the fathers. Not the heart of the Father, capital F. There's only one heavenly Father. But the heart of the fathers to the children. Our society is collapsing round about us. Families are breaking up in every country, isn't that so? The Elijah message binds families, I tell you that much. The Elijah message turns the heart of the fathers to their children and the heart of the children back to their fathers. The Elijah message is a family message. It's a binding message. It draws the family together. That's what it says. Don't you think so? What else could it mean?
Absolutely.
You cannot have the Elijah message and people hating their children or their children hating their father. You cannot. It's unsuccessful in those cases. The Elijah message draws children to their parents and draws parents to their children.